at all of you. Did you know that the Sunday after Easter is the most lightly attended Sunday in all the churches in the world? But they don't have our potluck. So I want to talk today about something I actually don't know much about. Ascension. Last week was Easter. And of course, as the stories are told, after the resurrection, Jesus made the rounds of his friends one more time, and then he ascended. Actually, the Gospels just mention ascension without describing it. The book of Acts elaborates a little bit. The disciples watch him lift up into the clouds. Okay, remember, Jesus is our model for what it means to be fully human. He said anything he could do, we could do. So if he can ascend, we can ascend. But what does that mean? I think we actually talk about it, we just use different words. When we talk about our soul's growth, I mean, what is the goal of that? It's to learn everything we can from the human experience so we don't have to come back here anymore. And once you've done enough and learned enough here, you get to stay in non-physical form on the other side. Charles Fillmore said the same thing. Unity's co-founder believed it is possible for all of us to do that. He called it regeneration. He did seem to think that we would stay here in our spiritualized bodies. It's confusing enough that Unity doesn't talk about it a lot, but I think he was talking about ascension, that our goal is to become whatever it is Jesus was after the resurrection. There's a whole area of study about ascended masters. Some people believe there's a pantheon of them, Jesus being one. They have been human, they were spiritual teachers on the earth, and now they are actively working with us from the other side. From what I've read, Earth is considered a special project because we need remedial work. This free will experiment has not gone well so far. But according to the books, the ascended masters have promised to stick with us until the last stubborn soul ascends. In the stories we have from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Jesus talks about how to live on earth, but not much in terms of ascension, not the end game of our spiritual expansion. But if you look at other books that were written and didn't make it into the Bible, there's more about our soul's journey to ascension. And this is where Mary Magdalene comes in. You know about the Nag Hammadi Gospels, the ancient papyrus texts that were found in the desert in Egypt in 1945. They reveal Mary Magdalene had a larger role as a disciple than we had been aware of. The Gospel of Philip says Jesus used to kiss her on the mouth. It's kind of a complaining about that. There are two other Gospels that have come to light at other times, not with Nag Hammadi, that are about and may have been written by Mary Magdalene. The Gospel of Mary and the Gospel of the Beloved Companion. Both include her interaction with the disciples after Jesus left. And it's fascinating partly to see their relationship, but also because she explains what Jesus taught her about ascension. So today I can share with you a formula to ascend. What your souls need to learn and go through in order to complete this human work and live fully in Christ consciousness. The Gospel of Mary is the one that's been more studied. We only have fragments of it, maybe half the book. And they were found in three different places at different times in two different languages starting in 1896. And even as they've been pieced together, it's convoluted and hard to understand, seems to have been written that way. But it's the same story that we find in the Gospel of the Beloved Companion, which seems to have been written earlier and kept intact. I've mentioned this book to you before. There's a woman named Johanna de Quillen who says this gospel of the beloved companion was brought from Egypt to southern France pretty soon after Jesus made his transition. And you know, there is a strong tradition of Mary Magdalene in France. This gospel was preserved and studied by the community in Languedoc, even when they were under physical attack from the Roman Church in the 13th century. They held on to this gospel and kept it secret. De Quillen grew up splitting her time between Ireland and southern France. She had family in both. She's not a Bible scholar, which she says is a good thing. It means she can write what she believes and not worry about being an academic outcast. She grew up in the Languedoc community, and she translated their precious gospel from the original Greek and published it in 2010. They are not all happy about that. But she believes it is the unredacted version of the Gospel of Mary, that it hasn't been changed and edited and gone through multiple translation filters like the books we have in the Bible. She laments that Mary Magdalene has become so trendy since the Da Vinci Code, because the focus on Mary Magdalene has largely been about were she and Jesus married and how the church might have conspired to suppress her role in the history of Christianity, which may be true, but it's not terribly important. What we have in these two gospels, which might be earlier and later versions of the same gospel, is a picture of Mary Magdalene as the primary apostle. Not just a follower of Jesus, but a partner. Cynthia Bourgeau, in her wonderful book about Mary Magdalene, which I've talked about before, speculates that Mary Magdalene was a spiritual teacher before she met Jesus. That maybe they discovered each other in a meeting of minds and souls, and they taught each other. And in our lifetime, 2,000 years later, we get to open this whole new window on Mary Magdalene and how important she was to the story, which is probably why she's named in every gospel, whether they liked her or not. She was a key character in Jesus' ministry. The Gospel of the Beloved Companion tracks very closely with the book of John. It might even be an early version of John, and there's been speculation that John was written by a woman. So let's start. In the Gospel of the Beloved Companion, you have the same Easter scene that we have in John. Mary discovers the empty tomb. She talks to a man she thinks is the gardener, and it turns out to be Jesus. In this version, he says, "Don't hold on to me, because I'm not flesh, but I'm not yet one with spirit." In John, he says, "I have not yet ascended to the Father." And in both, he says to Mary, "Go and tell the disciples." Now remember, the disciples had scattered when Jesus was arrested. So they had already gone back home to their fishing towns. They thought it was all over. And in the Gospel of the Beloved Companion, Mary Magdalene sends word to them and says, "Get back here." And they come. And they all congregate at her house in Bethany, where she lived with her sister Martha and her brother Lazarus. And she tells them about the resurrection, about her experience Sunday morning in the garden. And they're really not that impressed. Those guys are sitting around saying, "How are we supposed to go teach this stuff? When Jesus got killed for it, we can't go out there." So Mary takes a leadership role. She coaches them. This gospel says Jesus had given her a nickname. Remember how he called Simon the rock, which is Peter? He called Mary the tower. In Hebrew, it's Migdala. So Miriam Migdala, Mary the tower. She takes on these grumpy disciples. Then the Migdala stood up, greeted them all, and raising her right hand, said to her brethren, "Only from the truth I tell you, do not weep and do not grieve or be irresolute, for his grace and that of the one who sent him will be entirely with you and will protect you. But rather let us praise his greatness, for he has prepared us and made us truly human. When the Migdala said this, she turned their hearts to the good, and they began to discuss the words of Yeshua. So she cheered them up, and they started saying, yeah, you know, Jesus really was inspiring. And then Peter turns to Mary and says, sister, we know that he loved you more than any other among women. Tell us the words of the rabbi, which you remember, which you know and understand, but we do not, nor have we heard them. He's not just asking for information. He's acknowledging her status. He knows Jesus talked to her more. And Mary says, okay, what is hidden from you, I will proclaim to you. And she begins to talk about a vision of what it takes to ascend to the kingdom of heaven. Not a place, of course, but a level of consciousness, a state of being. And this is longer than I usually read, but I'm reading you a story. And this is new. This is new teaching from Jesus for us and the disciples. So Mary says, my master spoke thus to me. He said, Miriam, blessed are you who came into being before coming into being and whose eyes are set upon the kingdom, who from the beginning has understood and followed my teachings. Only from the truth I tell you, there's a great tree within you that does not change summer or winter, and its leaves do not fall. He's saying her soul existed before she came into human form and that she gets him. She's understood him from the beginning. And then he says more about this tree. She says, he showed me a vision in which I saw a great tree that seemed to reach into the heavens. And as I saw these things, he said, the roots of this tree are in the earth, which is your body. The trunk extends upward through the five regions of humanity to the crown, which is the kingdom of spirit. There are eight great boughs upon this tree, and each bough bears its own fruit, which you must eat in all its fullness. As the fruit of the tree in the garden caused Adam and Eve to fall into darkness, so this fruit will grant to you the light of the Spirit that is eternal life. Between each bough is a gate and a guardian who challenges the unworthy who try to pass. So this is about how we ascend. It's the journey into divine consciousness. He said, the leaves at the bottom of the tree are thick and plentiful, so no light penetrates to illuminate the way. But fear not, for I am the way and the light. And I tell you that as one ascends the tree, the leaves that block one from the light are fewer, so it is possible to see all more clearly. Those who seek to ascend must free themselves from the world. If you do not free yourself from the world, you will die in the darkness that is at the root of the tree. But if you free yourself, you will rise and reach the light that is the eternal life of spirit. So this is an inside job. We're not being saved by Jesus. We do the work ourselves. And as he said these things, Mary says, I felt my soul ascend and saw the first great bough that bears the fruit of love and compassion, the foundation of all things. And I knew that before you can eat of this fruit and gain its nourishment, you must be free of all judgment and wrath. When you have freed yourself of these burdens, you may eat of the fruit, and so gain the love and compassion that will allow you to pass the first of seven guardians. And I heard the voice of the Lord of wrath calling to me, but I denied him, and he had no part in me. So who is the Lord of wrath? Ego, probably. Always calling to us, trying to take over. When you free yourself from judgment and anger, you make room for love and compassion. But as I read this about letting go of all judgment and anger, I thought, I am not even on the first bow. So she goes on. He showed me the second great bow, weighed down with the fruit of wisdom and understanding. And I saw that before you can taste of its bounty, You must be free of all ignorance and intolerance. And I heard the voice of ignorance call to me, but I knew him not, and so my soul did thus unchallenged. Then my master showed me the third great bough, which bears the fruit of honor and humility. Only when free of all duplicity and arrogance may you partake of its nourishment. And arrogance called to me, saying, "You're not worthy, go back." But my soul was deaf to him, and so moved onward and upward into increasing light. This is a code. This is the soul's journey to divine consciousness through the human experience. Free yourself from ignorance and intolerance to achieve wisdom and understanding. Shed duplicity and arrogance to live in honor and humility. And then there came the fourth bough, blossoming with the fruit of strength and courage. And I heard him tell me that to eat of this fruit, you must have freed yourself from the weakness of the flesh and confronted and conquered the illusion of your fears. And the master of the world stood before me and claimed me as his own, but I denied him, and he had no part of me. The master of the world, I suppose that's like the devil, but it shows up as weakness of the flesh. And Fillmore wrote about this too. He called it carnal mind, or sense consciousness of the five senses. And it's just what you would think. It's becoming preoccupied with our human bodies at the expense of our spiritual growth. And this master of the world shows up as fear, but that's an illusion. Only then, my master told me, when you have rejected the deceiver, can you pass through the hardest gate of all to attain the fifth bough and the fruit of clarity and truth. Only then will you know the clarity and truth of your soul. And knowing yourself for the first time, understand that you are a child of the living spirit. And as my soul moved upward, she says, I realized that I could no longer hear the voice of the world, as all had become as silence. Level 5, you're finally free of the world. Notice there's still more work to do, even after you get past the devil. And we're not talking a literal devil here. It's flesh and fear. But just as an aside, last year I presented a book at our spirited reading group called World of Archangels. And it also talked about levels of the soul. And this one, level 5, is the level of the ascended masters. This is where having a physical body is optional, but you're still connected to a planet. And supposedly, our ascended masters, like Jesus, are still working with the earth. But the voice of the world has become silent for them. This is where you find clarity and truth. Then in the light above, I saw the sixth bough, the one that bore the fruit of power and healing. My master told me that when you've eaten of the fruit of the clarity and truth of yourself, then you could partake of the fruit of power and healing, the power to heal your own soul and thereby make it ready to ascend to the seventh bough, where it will be filled by the fruits of light and goodness. So the clarity and truth of yourself, your own divinity, you can heal your own soul. This isn't being done for you. And she says, as I saw my soul, now free of all darkness, ascend again to be filled with the light and goodness that is spirit. And I was filled with a fierce joy as my soul turned to fire and flew upwards into the flames from which my masters showed me the eighth and final bough, upon which burned the fruit of the grace and beauty of the Spirit. This is so cool. The power and healing of your own soul, free of darkness, filled with the light and goodness of Spirit, fierce joy, grace and beauty. And then listen to what happens at the end. She says, and I felt my soul and all that I could see dissolve and vanish in a brilliant light, in a likeness unto the sun. And in the light I beheld a woman of extraordinary beauty, clothed in garments of brilliant white. The figure extended its arms, and I felt my soul drawn into its embrace. And in that moment, I was freed of the world, and I realized that the fetter of forgetfulness was temporary. From now on, I shall rest through the course of the time of the age in silence. And then, as if from a great distance, I heard the voice of my master tell me, "Miriam, whom I have called the Migdala, now you have seen all and have known the truth of yourself, the truth that is I am. Now you have become the completion of completions." And thus the vision ended. When the Migdala had told of all that Yeshua had said and done, she fell silent, since it was in that silence that Yeshua had spoken with her and revealed these truths. I like to imagine that the disciples were sitting in stunned and appreciative silence. And then they said, "Wow, Mary, that's amazing. Tell us more. What do you think all that means?" But instead they said, "He did not." "He did not tell you all that weird stuff. You're a woman." And the story goes on. They started to argue with each other. Andrew said, "These are strange and complicated ideas." Peter was the most upset, having thought he was Jesus' right-hand man. He said, "Who's going to listen to her?" Mary bursts into tears and says, "You think I'm lying about all of this?" Levi turns on Peter and says, "You've always been a hothead. And now you're taking it out on Mary. If Jesus thought she was worthy, then who are we to reject her? He knew her best." And Levi goes on. He says, "Rather, let us be ashamed and do as she says. Let us put on perfect humanity and acquire it as she has done, and separate as he commanded us, and preach the testimony of the Son of humanity, not laying down any other rule or other law beyond that which he gave us." And when they heard this, they were divided and argued amongst themselves. And therefore they began to leave separately and go forth to proclaim and to preach and teach what they understood of the words of the rabbi. Uh-oh. They went out to preach and teach, and they couldn't even agree among themselves. They didn't go out as a band of brothers. They left separately to teach what each of them believed Jesus had said and meant. They were the first filters of his teaching. The divisions in the Christian church began right there in that house in Bethany. And they couldn't teach what they didn't understand. Presumably, they left Mary there at her home, and I'm guessing that's when she started packing to leave town. Maybe she did end up in France. But let's go back through the boughs of that tree, the code for ascension. And by the way, this does not track exactly with the tree of life in the Jewish Kabbalah. But that developed centuries later, so maybe this was a precursor to that idea. And climbing a tree is a great visual for the process of achieving divine consciousness. And Mary enumerates the challenges to overcome. It starts in darkness. You have to be guided by faith. To free yourself of the world, you have to know there's more to life than living in a physical body in three dimensions. So first, let go of judgment and anger and replace it with love and compassion. Then overcome ignorance and intolerance to achieve wisdom and understanding. And it's interesting, actually, in this vision, we see the prize first. It's not do this and you'll get that. It's look how wonderful this is, and all you have to do is let go of that. So look at honor and humility. All you have to do is let go of arrogance and duplicity. To have strength and courage, free yourself from the weakness of the flesh and conquer the illusion of fear. Then you have a chance for clarity and truth of your soul. Reject the deceiver, our false beliefs, mass consciousness, and the voice of the world will fall silent. After clarity and truth come power and healing. There's nothing to let go of here. The soul is free of all darkness. It enjoys the fruits of all light and goodness. And finally, the grace and beauty of spirit. And then dissolve. Be drawn into the embrace of spirit, into the light and silence of oneness, the truth that is, I am. I am is the name of God. It is the divine in you. It's always there, emerging through this human experience to the extent that we let it. And that final embrace of the light makes all this worth the journey. So let's take these thoughts into meditation. When we meditate, we become still and quiet and relaxed. You might want to take a deep breath and just notice the chair supporting you. And turn within to that presence in you. I am. It's the name of God in you. And every time you speak the words, I am, you are invoking your own divine power. So use those words for what you want to be true. I am the light. I am love. I am compassion and humility and clarity. I am one with all that is. Take a moment and sense that presence in you. It is all around you. It is in everyone else because it's all one. But remember, it's in you too. And as you move through this human experience toward divine consciousness, some days will be better than others. But now we see the path. We see the tree to climb. And we are so grateful for those who preserved the teachings of 2,000 years ago and kept it as best they could and related it and passed it down so that we too can know these ancient truths. We're so grateful for the awareness of who we truly are. Grateful to know that our human journey is a path toward oneness. Grateful we get to have this experience and keep learning and growing, never alone. And so for all that is in our lives right now and all that is yet to be on this path, we say thank you, God. And so it is.